Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
I picked up our office mail this morning, and waiting for me was a recent issue of Sports Illustrated magazine. On the cover, Paris Saint-Germain's new boy, Neymar. The Brazilian star is shown kicking the ball, and right under his right boot is the headline, Soccer's Next Big Thing. Soccer's Next Big Thing is earning headlines and magazine cover shots all over the world. After a successful debut for PSG and his world record signing with the French club, Neymar joined PSG from Barcelona earlier this month in a transfer deal worth nearly $260 million, count a million U.S. dollars. On Tuesday in Geneva, Switzerland, Neymar officially became a goodwill ambassador for Handicap International. The NGO supports people with disabilities and people living in conflict and disaster zones. Neymar pledged to work for millions who are, in his words, less visible but deserve equality. Meanwhile, Neymar's former teammate at Barcelona, Lionel Messi, along with Portuguese star Cristiano Ronaldo and Italian goalkeeper Gianluigi Buffon, are the three footballers on a short list for UEFA's Player of the Year award. Ronaldo helped lead the Spanish club Real Madrid to a second consecutive UEFA Champions League title and finished as the tournament's top scorer with 12 goals. The 39-year-old goalkeeper Buffon was one of the key players for Juventus, which won a sixth consecutive Serie A title in Italy, a third straight Italian Cup success, and a runner-up finish in the Champions League. And Lionel Messi lifted the Spanish King's Cup with Barcelona and finished as La Liga's top scorer last season with 37 goals. The UEFA Player of the Year award will be presented at this season's UEFA Champions League group stage draw in Monaco on August 24th. Messi and Ronaldo have both won the award twice, with Ronaldo voted the winner last year. In more football news, Ghana international Kevin Prince Boateng is once again without a club after ending his contract with the Spanish club Las Palmas. Las Palmas said irreversible personal decisions were behind the decision. The 30-year-old Boateng had a contract with the La Liga club until 2020 after signing with them in August 2016. He scored 10 goals in 28 appearances for Las Palmas, including one in his debut match. Boateng has previously played for top clubs in Italy, England, and Germany. Meanwhile, Algerian international Sofiane Feghouli is moving from the English Premier League club West Ham to the Turkish club Galatasaray. The 27-year-old midfielder signed a five-year contract with Galatasaray worth a reported $5 million. Feghouli was born in Paris and played for France at the youth level, but he chose to play for Algeria at the senior level and has scored 11 goals in 42 appearances for the national team, the Desert Foxes. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
The Voice of America.
From Pink to Pitbull, Beyonce to Bruno Mars, the hits live here on the Top 20 Countdown. Hi, I'm Ray McDonald, and for the past 30 years, I've been counting down the very best of the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart. The hit list never sleeps, so don't you miss a moment of the action. Join me every Thursday for the Top 20 Countdown, right here and worldwide on the Voice of America.
This is the Voice of America. Washington, D.C.
In African athletics, Botswana's Isaac Makwala didn't win a medal at the recent World Championships in London, but he certainly earned headlines, as we hear now from our friend in the British capital, the energetic Andy Edwards.
I must say, Isaac Makwala, I mean, he was a name on a start list for me, and, you know, good 400-meter runner. That's his special event, good 200-meter run as well, with 19.77. But then we had illness strike at least some athletes in the World Championship camps or the hotel or hotels, plural, where they were staying, and they started dropping out with what you might call a stomach bug, described as the norovirus, and Makwala was one of those who apparently became ill. And I can understand the IAAF's position saying, well, this isn't just one or two. There were double figures of German athletes, for example, who became ill, and their medical team was saying, oh, don't shake hands with anybody. You know, just keep away, keep to yourself, because this bug is going round. Although the medical team of Botswana said that Isaac Makwala was clear of the bug and fine to compete, the IAAF said, no, he's got to go through 48 hours of quarantine. It meant he missed the 400. First, it seemed he was going to miss the 200. And then we had this fantastic picture, Sonny, of Isaac Makwala running a solo 200 in order to get the qualifying time to go through to the next round of the half lap. And he did that. And then about an hour or so later, he actually lined up in the race and he got through. But, well, he finished sixth in the final. I'm sure he would have done better if he hadn't had that. But I can understand. He was dreadfully disappointed. His coaching team were. I can also understand the IAAF saying, well, if the bug spreads more, we've got to be safe rather than sorry.
Andy, how do you rate the performance of the South African Wade Van Niekerk?
VOA!
Our VOA listeners will remember Van Niekerk, gold at the Olympics last year in the men's 400 meters, world record in that same race in Rio. This time in London, he won gold in the 400 meters and then silver in the 200 meters. Your thoughts?
A lot of people are saying Wade Van Niekerk is the star who could replace a leading figure for world athletics, that of Usain Bolt. He's got that ability. He's got wonderful ability. A very different person, I think. I mean, he's a quieter kind of guy. I mean, he's not a showman away from doing what he does so wonderfully well on the track. Interesting, Michael Johnson, you know, one of certainly all-time greats, I think, would say probably the greatest 400-meter runner yet. He was commentating for British TV, and he was saying Michael ran 400 and 200, as does Wade Van Niekerk, and how hard it is. You know, it's the 400 is hard enough, but then when you're doing the 200 and the training, that's the key. The training for both events is so tough. So I could see that having won the 400, Van Niekerk, in the rounds of the 200 going into the final, he looked tired, and he's entitled to look tired. I mean, not tired as an everyday person tired, but you could see that he felt those qualifying races to get into the final.
It was six long days, six hard days for myself, and beyond anything I ever imagined. I knew I had to work very hard each and every round and try and save as much whenever I can, but the competitors I competed against was world-class every single round, so it made life a bit more tougher than I thought it would be.
Van Niekerk, well, hats off to him. Still a lot of potential. What's going to be fascinating is if he can be the first man ever to break 43 seconds for the 400. You know, 43.03, I think, is personal best. huge potential. And it's a fascinating story as well, isn't it, with his coach, Anne Spurter. Tiny Anne, 75 years of age, and she clearly is a very important figure in his life.
Still with some of the African highlights in London, Andy. Did you expect Ethiopia's Almaz Ayana to win the women's 10,000 meters in such dominating style? She did meet her match, though, against Kenya's Helen Obiri, taking silver in the 5,000 meters on the final day.
A year ago in the Olympics in Rio, Almaz Ayana was just incredible, off the charts. I mean, to smash the world record in the 10,000 meters, which had been held since 1993 by Wang Yongsha of China, and to do that with such a big margin was extraordinary. I mean, I remember those days in the early 90s when those Chinese women under famous coach Ma Junren were setting times which, well, better runners than me, but some very good men runners were saying, well, I can't run that, and how are they doing it? And some of them ultimately were revealed to be having used performance-enhancing drugs. No positive tests against Almaz Ayana. She's not failed any tests. Fantastic performance in the 10,000. And when I say amazing, I mean that truly, literally amazing, because she came into these world championships. She had not done a competition for 1 year, a whole year, and that she'd been suffering from illness. So you think, well, how do you do that? But she just ran away from the field. I think watching the race, she'd lapped all but one of them. And Tirunesh Dibaba, also from Ethiopia, well, we all know how good Tirunesh Dibaba is. Maybe she's not quite at her best now on the track, but she's turned into a fine marathon runner. She was a very distant second. So Ayana then came to the 5,000. As you say, Sonny, Helen Obiri, great finish from Obiri, the Kenyan, to win the gold in the 5,000.
When I came to this race, I knew the race was going to be faster. I decided to do my own race, and I knew Ayana was a very strong girl. So I decided to be patient until 200 meters to go. So from there, I said to myself, so I can go.
I know amongst the kind of stew of allegations that go around in world athletics, some athletes have come out openly and said they feel that just in general, drug testing in Ethiopia, they feel, is not being conducted as stringently or consistently as it should be. And so that can lead to fingers being pointed. But certainly, Ayana, extraordinary performance in the 10,000 meters to win the women's gold.
Andy, the Kenyans were victorious in the men's steeplechase. They almost have the copyright on that event, but it was the USA first and second in the women's steeple. Kenya took the bronze. Andy, that women's steeplechase, remarkable race, and I always expect the Kenyans to win the steeple.
Well, I think there were certainly leading articles in the Kenyan press the next day. Of course, they won the men, Conseslus Kipruto, he took that. And I think going back, I was trying to remember when the last time, I think it was 1987, that's right, 1987, the last time that a non-Kenyan won a world title in the steeplechase. So that's expected. Kipruto, okay, he was going to win it. But it does show you, with the American Emma Coburn winning the gold and then another USA athlete, Courtney Frerichs, taking the silver. And Frerichs took 15 seconds off her personal best. It shows the Americans have got good middle and long distance runners now, men and women. They've been training in groups in various parts of the USA and under various coaches. And Coburn is a very good hurdler. In watching that final, you could see, obviously, you've got 3,000 metres, you've got those barriers, including the water, the jump. If you are an efficient hurdler, it saves you time. And Coburn also has good basic flat speed. In the development of the women's steeplechase, when it first became an official event, you'd get women doing well who had flat speed and basically, you know, climbed over the barriers, climbed over the hurdles, because you could get away with it. But you can't now. So we just had one Kenyan medal. That was bronze. Hyvin Kiang, the Olympic champion. I will say it was hard luck on another Kenyan, Beatrice Chepkoech. It just shows you have to concentrate. On the first lap, she missed the water jump first time round. So she, because they alter the parameters of the track to accommodate the water jump. And if you're in that pack, you have to make sure you're following the correct line. She didn't. And then subsequently, she actually fell at another barrier, not a water jump. So she had to pick herself up off the track, run again. she probably lost around 10 seconds from that. So I think she would have been a contender. But Coburn, she did it all right. I think it's good for the sport. You know, one of the problems of the sport can be if people look at distance races and say, oh, well, what am I looking at? Kenya, Ethiopia, Kenya. And it's good to spread it around because if you're looking at a world audience and people who are not track and field, athletics aficionados, it's like one of two teams always winning a league soccer title. It does get boring.
Andy, Emma Coburn's gold, one of 10 gold won by Team USA in a dominating performance at London 2017, 30 medals overall. And let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to Allison Felix. Allison won 2 gold and 1 bronze. She now has a record 16 career medals at the World Championships. Allison Felix, kind of a late hero at London, would you say, Andy?
Oh, yeah. She's really been a great performer for the USA. Came into the US team quite a young age and has been consistent and has carried it through, not only in the longer sprint 200 and then the 400, but also always figures in the relay, the 4x400. So she's a wonderful performer, a very graceful-looking athlete. You know, it's a funny thing that you look at athletes who move well. Well, sometimes they move well, and they're back down the field. It's not always what gets you the medals. But Allison Felix, no doubt about it, great performer, and I think she's got some years left as well.
Thanks, Andy. That's the energetic Andy Edwards. And Andy was talking with me from London. I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOASunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOASunnySports. Joining us once again here in Studio 22 is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be here with you.
Welcome back, Andrew. I understand a basketball superstar is speaking out on social media.
Indeed he is, and that is none other than LeBron James speaking out against the protests that are going on in Charlottesville, Virginia. Our listeners might be familiar with this story. This is really the big story dominating the headlines here in the U.S., but a number of white supremacist, Nazi-affiliated groups protesting in Charlottesville, Virginia, number of clashes there, a car accident where one woman was killed while she was trying to protest against the white supremacist. This has really captured a lot of attention throughout the United States, throughout the world, and that includes LeBron James. He has been one who has spoken out in the past about these issues, and this is no different. So at his annual family reunion, as he calls it, for people that he's helped with his foundation, he has said that this needs to stop, that we need to look at what's going on in the country and be better about this and address these issues. And he followed that up on Twitter, tweeting out that hate has always existed in America. Yes, we know that, but Donald Trump just made it fashionable again. Statues have nothing to do with us now, because all of these protests revolved around the removal of a Confederate war statue from the Civil War. So LeBron getting some praise here, getting some criticism. Some fans are applauding him for standing up and speaking out, using his platform as an athlete and one of the biggest names in sports to talk about these issues. Others saying that he should stay out of it and stick to basketball. That's a line that we've heard many times before about other players who have waded into political issues. For instance, Colin Kaepernick, the former quarterback in the National Football League, who took a knee during the national anthem to protest the treatment of African Americans. A lot of people criticize that decision. So LeBron's getting some criticism as well. Others are saying it's fine if he wants to speak out against racism as an African American, but leave the politics out of it. Don't take aim at President Trump. So lots of different opinions about this. There are lots of African American athletes in U.S. sports, especially in basketball and in American football. So we see a lot of them speaking out and using their platforms as these well-known figures to talk about these issues. So LeBron James is just one of those.
And not the first time LeBron has spoken out on a hot topic here in the States, Andrew. I remember a few years ago after the killing of African-American Trayvon Martin, LeBron and some teammates, highly publicized photo wearing hoodies. Trayvon was wearing a hoodie when he died. And some powerful comments coming out in the wake of this Charlottesville tense times, really.
They are, but it's, again, the social justice element. It's something not just in current times that we've seen, but even throughout sports. You go back to looking at the color barriers being broken in sports. You look at how much of a role that athletes have played in social justice and played in advancing these rights and standing up for what's right. So really, it shouldn't be much surprise that LeBron is speaking out, but he is indeed, and again, kicking off that debate on social media.
And excuse me, Andrew, I also understand one of the top cable networks here in the USA coming under fire.
Yes, this is ESPN, the big sports network here in the U.S. In the lead up to the start of the National Football League season in the next couple weeks, ESPN did a mock fantasy football auction where people could bid on professional NFL players and add them to their fantasy teams. All kind of this hype to get ready for the football season. But there was outrage as a result of this, especially in the wake of the Charlottesville protests, because some of those players involved, whether they were auctioning off in this mock auction, were African-American. And people compared it online to some slave auctions of the 1800s, saying it was in very poor taste. Now, ESPN came out with a statement, said that their players they were auctioning off were black and white, that the audience members there who were watching this were black and white, men and women. But they did apologize, and this is the quote from ESPN. It says, "Auction drafts are a common part of fantasy football, and ESPN segments replicated an auction draft with a diverse slate of top professional football players. Without that context, we understand the optics could be portrayed as offensive, and we apologize." So they note that a lot of the clips going around on social media don't show the entire thing, just show a little snippet, but that snippet wasn't going over very well. Now, interesting, again, we talked about LeBron James having kind of this divided opinion on whether he's right or wrong to speak out. One poll I saw on social media asked if this auction was insensitive or if this was just a mock draft and people should get over it. And it was split about 50-50. So you do have those diverse opinions out there. Some people saying that this was in poor taste. It was right for ESPN to apologize. Other people saying if you look at it in its context, it wasn't really that bad. But again, another instance where sports is coming into the cultural issues that we're talking about today.
Turning to tennis, Andrew, the U.S. Open in New York, right around the corner. I think it begins on August 28th in New York. Big warm-up tournament in Cincinnati that has seen a few top players sort of fall out.
Yeah, this has been quite a surprise kind of wrap-up right before the U.S. Open. Milos Raonic, the Canadian player ranked number 10 in the world, announced that he's pulling out of the Cincinnati Open with an injury. Japan's Kei Nishikori, who's the world number 9, announces that he's out of the tournament and out for the rest of the year with a wrist injury. And world number 4, Stan Wawrinka of Switzerland, he is out for the rest of 2017 with a knee injury. Wawrinka actually got a lot of attention because he tweeted out a string of emojis that kind of spell out the story of his injury, his surgery, his rehabilitation, his return to tennis eventually, and hopefully winning more trophies, but getting a lot of attention with that string of about 50 different emojis that he used to tell the story. It's pretty creative. But if you look at Cincinnati right now, Sonny, of the top 10 men's players, there are only 3 out of the top 10 playing in Cincinnati. Rafael Nadal, Alexander Zverev, who we've talked about on the show before, and Dominic Thiem of Austria. So fans online are sensing an opening, but is it going to be for which one of those 3 players? Nadal certainly has an opening now that he could come and maybe win the U.S. Open. Zverev could be the first in a long time not named Djokovic, Federer, Nadal, or Murray to win a Grand Slam tournament. And interestingly enough, the last time someone not named Federer, Nadal, Murray, or Djokovic was ranked number 1 in the world, February 2004.
Wow.
So Zverev fans hoping he can maybe even ascend to number 1 and taking advantage of the climate that's out there, but we'll see what happens.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks very much, Sonny.
And that wraps up the August 16th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Patrick Dea. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States congratulates the people of Rwanda on their active and peaceful participation in the presidential election held August 4th. More than 6.6 million Rwandans cast ballots for Mr. Kagame, according to the official tally, though this number appears inflated. Just over 80,000 voted for the opposition. The government claimed turnout totaled 97.6%. But the electoral process fell short of democratic standards. State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert said, "We are disturbed by irregularities observed during voting and reiterate longstanding concerns over the integrity of the vote tabulation process." The United States commends the Rwandan media for reporting on complaints of harassment of some opposition candidates and Rwandan citizens during the campaign. The U.S. also commends average citizens, the National Electoral Commission, and government officials for speaking out and addressing those complaints. Spokesperson Nauert added, "We applaud the televised presidential debate," while noting that voters' understanding would have benefited from broader participation of the candidates themselves. The U.S. remains concerned by the lack of transparency in determining the eligibility of prospective candidates. It is hoped the new electoral law to be debated in the next session of Parliament will clarify that process well before the 2018 parliamentary elections. Rwandan President Kagame has led the country of 12 million people since his rebels helped to end the 1994 genocide in which more than 800,000 Tutsis and moderate Hutus were massacred by Hutu extremists. Under President Kagame, Rwanda has made great economic strides, but his critics say this has come at the expense of civil liberties and media freedoms. Human rights groups report that his government has used state powers to silence the opposition through systematic repression. A constitutional amendment in 2015 allows Mr. Kagame to stay in power until 2034 if he pursues it. The United States expressed disappointment with the change to the Constitution and Kagame's decision to seek a third term. The United States encourages the government of Rwanda to foster an environment where civil society and all political parties can participate in elections without intimidation and elections truly reflect the will of the people. The United States stands by the people of Rwanda in their efforts to build strong, democratic, and inclusive institutions in order to ensure long-term stability and a democratic, prosperous future for all.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, troubling times in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The United States says it's concerned at the inability of both the DRC government and an opposition coalition to implement a political transition agreement reached last December. A DRC political discussion.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
And AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.